Okay, welcome back. This is going to be our third special report on Morgellons disease. This is a frightening, scary, almost science fiction-like issue that is surrounded with some very bizarre and unusual medical problems. We're going to talk about those tonight, not the least of which is, let me put it this way. Imagine, if you will, you were afflicted with a disease that no one understood and most doctors dismissed as some kind of a psychological aberration. In other words, it's all in your head. Well, that's happened to hundreds, if not thousands, of people. And that may be the most lonely feeling of all, to know that there's something severely wrong with you, but to be able to get nothing of any substance from a doctor. What do you do? Well, in the case of Morgellons people, they at least have the Morgellons Research Foundation and other organizations which are moving forward to pick up the ball and try to run with it a little bit. Back with us tonight for our third program on this very grave issue is Cliff Mickelson. Cliff has distinguished himself as an outstanding spokesman and a superb writer. He has a number of articles at Rents.com right now. He is one of the original fiber disease Morgellons researchers with a huge amount of research published on the Internet over the past 2 years. He has been a victim. He speaks very eloquently and shockingly about it all. And we're going to say hello to Cliff right now first. Hi, Cliff. Welcome back.
Thank you, Jeff. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm glad you're still there.
Oh, I'm pretty ornery. It's tough to get rid of me.
Pardon the humor, but I know you are one of the few people who are, I think, able to rise above you and the other Morgellons people. Such a horrible thing, and laugh about it. So we do have to keep laughing. If we stop laughing, I guess we're finished, aren't we?
Absolutely, Jeff. And the old saying is, you got to laugh because the only other alternative is to cry.
Yeah.
And that's no fun. So it's better to laugh because, you know, you just take this one day at a time and you just believe that you will beat this thing.
Well, and we will, all of us working together. We're going to get a handle on this. We're going to find out what the hell it is, and we're going to whip it. That's
Absolutely.
Going to happen. Joining us again tonight with Cliff Mickelson is Charles Holman and his wife, Cindy Casey. Charles is the board chairman of the Morgellons Research Foundation. Welcome, Charles.
Hello, Jeff.
And Cindy Casey, the coordinator of the Morgellons Research Foundation's Nursing Advisory Panel. Hi, Cindy. We saved the best for last.
Hi, Jeff.
Welcome back, you guys. How are you doing, Cindy?
Pretty much like Cliff said, I take it one day at a time and just, you know, try and get through that day. I got to a point where I'm able to manage it, but I'm still very afraid of it. And so it's just a continual thing. You just try and deal with it as best you can.
And for our listeners out there who are new to this subject, both Cliff Mickelson and Cindy Casey are sufferers of the Morgellons syndrome, whatever it really is, we don't know. And you just heard Cindy, who's had it for, let me see if I can remember, Cindy, how many years? Five?
We think about 7 years.
7 years, okay. Uh-huh. Well, who's counting, right?
Yeah.
Cliff, let me go back to you on that situation I posed. It is almost impossible for me to imagine the frustration, which would lead to loneliness, a whole gamut of emotions, and probably end up with abject fear at some point. When you go to the doctor, you know something is grievously wrong with your body from head to foot, and maybe elsewhere, and you get nothing. They say, sorry, pal, take these antidepressants, see me in 6 months. It's all in your head. Or we get that lunatic doctor who went on, what was it, MSNBC or CNN, I can't remember, and said
CNN.
Yeah, CNN, and the guy says that this is a fictional illness, it's nothing at all, and people actually scratch themselves open and then lit. Now, guess what the guy said? He said they insert fibers into their lesions.
Yes, he did say that. He did indeed. And you know, we pay taxes to give these guys a salary. It's really something doesn't click there with that one.
Well, when you go into a doctor, now Cindy Casey is a health professional. We're going to ask her in just a minute, but Cliff, for Morgellons sufferers who go into a doctor and they're given the psychological diagnosis, I cannot imagine anything more profoundly terrorizing than that.
Absolutely, Jeff. One of the problems that has cropped up repeatedly in this particular instance is that we're, as a society, trained to give our power to doctors right out the door. In other words, if the doctor says that's what it is, that's what it is. And so a lot of people go to the doctor, and the doctor says, here's a diagnosis for you're a nut.
Right.
And you go, wow, the doctor says I'm a nut? I must really be crazy. Am I really imagining this? The problem is that people are not used to seizing their control of their own destiny and taking back their power and saying, look, doc, I don't care how many Harvards you went to. I got this stuff coming out my skin. If you can't see it, then the only one delusional around here, Jack, is you.
Good, good, good. Excellent. Well said. Cindy Casey, as a health professional, have you been greeted with this kind of a response and reception from the your peers, so to speak?
Yes. It shocked me how the doctors treated me. The doctors that I saw, I could they would roll their eyes and look at me. And, I mean, some of these doctors I even knew and I had worked with, and I said, you know, what are you thinking? What, you know, what's going on here? And if they had only just said, you know, I don't know what you have.
Oh, you don't find, yeah.
Looked,
doctors
will,
don't like that expression.
No,
I don't
they
know.
They will not say, I don't know what you have and I don't know how to help you. Had they said that, I would have been okay with that.
Right.
And I would have understood that. But no, they wanted me to take some antipsychotic drugs, but they still thought I was okay enough to work in the ICU and take care of patients.
Right.
But they thought that this was a delusion without even looking. It was beyond me, the fact that they wouldn't even look. Where is the medical curiosity here?
Right. Right. Well, these new young doctors, many of them are absolutely frightened to step outside of any line of what they think is propriety and professional expertise. They just won't do it.
Don't kid yourself, Jeff. Even the old schoolers are afraid to step out of line.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, Charles Holman.
Yeah.
What is it, the formal diagnosis of someone delusional? What is it again? Give it to our listeners. Yeah, I leave it up to you guys.
Cliff?
Come on, Cliff, you tell us.
Delusions of parasitosis is what it's called. It was originally, I believe, and Cindy's probably can correct me if I make a mistake on this. It was originally known as the matchbox syndrome, and it was popularized via a paper that was written in the early 30s
mm-hmm.
by an MD, a GP,
mm-hmm.
as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
And this came from the old saw where a patient would come into the office with a matchbox, and in the matchbox would be the sample, say, hey, look here, doc, this is what I pulled off my skin or whatever. It became known as the matchbox syndrome, and it was a sign, mind you, a very rare sign, Jeff,
uh-huh.
because it was extremely unusual diagnosis to encounter. This was a sign of delusions of parasitosis. Interestingly enough, I'm not sure exactly what the figures are, but they're very low, the number of diagnoses that were given between 1930 and 1995 or so. And from about 1998 to the present, there's been probably more DOP diagnoses, as we call them, DOP,
mm-hmm.
Given per month than there has been in the last, you know, several decades.
Wow. So, pretty dopey situation, right? Now, you've done that too many times to count. I'm sorry, I just...
Yeah, well, I like that. I like that. There's some dope going around here, and it's between ears and a lot of these doctors.
It's hard for me to believe that someone could walk in literally presenting with these symptoms of Morgellons patients and have a doctor say that. I just don't understand the logic. There is no logic.
Well, Jeff, it all goes back to most of these people go to a dermatologist first.
Right.
I'm sorry, I call them derms. Anyway,
sure.
And their training, their academia, literally outlines, you know, to beware of this, that these people are going to say, come in saying they have bugs crawling in their skin and look what came out and blah, blah,
mm-hmm.
blah. And
mm-hmm.
this is, you know, obviously a sign of delusions of parasitosis. This has been taught since I think 1938. Am I right here, Cliff?
32, 38. So I thought it was in the early 30s, yeah.
This is well ingrained in dermatological academia. And what does a person say? I sent Cliff he may have forwarded to you a note on this. It's called What Can You Say? And it's my little rant on this. These people have this creepy, crawly feeling going on in their skin. Now, we all mentally go to, it feels kind of like bugs, you know. Well, if that's the catchphrase that the doctor's looking for,
sure.
You're never going to win.
No.
Because we don't have, in our human, in our English vocabulary especially, we don't have any better way to describe this sensation.
Mm-hmm.
Because bug, you know, the bee stings, the ant bites, the mite, you know, crawls. We don't have any vocabulary other than it feels like bugs.
We are really without then a defining nomenclature to deal with this.
I've always said a Morgellons patient should go in, roll up their sleeves, show the lesions, and say, "Got anything for something like this?"
That would work. It should. Should get somebody's attention. But what happens is they roll out the antidepressants and say, "Good luck." Sickening.
Yeah.
Sickening.
Exactly.
Be right back with our special guest. Hold on, gang. We have to pause. We'll do some business and come back in just a couple of minutes with Cliff Mickelson, Charles Holman, and Cindy Casey. Next. Okay, right back with you. And if you just joined us a couple minutes ago, most individuals with Morgellons disease or syndrome report a whole range of bizarre and disturbing symptoms: crawling, feeling on the skin, stinging, biting sensations, as well as wide open non-healing skin lesions, which are associated with highly unusual structures, which we talked about last night. These lesions form scabs, which aren't scabs. It's bizarre. They're fiber-like or filament-like coverings and are some of the most striking features of the disease. In addition, patients report the presence of seed-like granules and black speck-like material associated with their skin. There is also peripheral nervous system damage, if you will, or interference. The peripheral nervous system is often affected by Morgellons, but the most significant element of the infection appears to be the effect on the central nervous system. Nearly everyone with the illness reports extreme difficulty with mental concentration and short-term memory. We call it brain fog sometimes, but whatever it is, it can lead to all sorts of trouble. Mood disorders such as depression and bipolar disorder are extremely common in this group of patients, affecting well over half of all individuals reporting symptoms of Morgellons. Parents of children with Morgellons, and what a tragedy that is for children to have this disease, report that the majority of these kids have ADHD, ODD, mood disorders, or autism, and sometimes more than one of those. It is estimated that 65% of these kids have some form of psychiatric illness, and 10% have an autism spectrum disorder. It is not a pretty picture. Anything else you want to add to the delusions of parasitosis diagnosis, Cliff Mickelson, before we move on?
Yes, there is, Jeff. I'm not at all passive about this issue. In fact, my whole premise is to go on the offensive about it, because as far as I'm concerned, this issue, as it relates to the DOP and the Morgellons community, has basically exposed the ugly underbelly of the American Medical Association, in my opinion. It's an indictment of their intellectual bankruptcy. It's an indictment of their guild mentality and the failure of their entire approach.
Sad case. Cindy Casey, what about these people who are telling patients that it's all in your head when their bodies literally are almost oozing data, oozing evidence, oozing symptoms? I mean, these things are all over the place, and I just don't understand, honestly, how a doctor, any doctor of good conscience and good faith, could tell a patient that. I mean, what the hell's wrong with these people? You just say, "I don't know. You need to go see Dr. Smith or the clinic here or the specialist there. We're going to find out what this is. There's something wrong here." But they don't seem to do that often enough.
It just has blown me away. I am flat out embarrassed of the medical community and the way they have treated this. I don't understand it. There's no excuse for it. In the beginning, I thought, well, I'll go see another doctor. This doctor won't look, but surely the next guy will, you know. And
right.
When I begin to see that none of them, they all just wanted to avoid looking at it. Then I went to UCSF, a teaching facility, and I thought, well, you know, this is where the medical school is. Surely someone will look at it here. Well, I found out that they are teaching the residents in dermatology to not look. You know, and that was just...
Explain that a little bit more, please.
They, as Cliff kind of put, they have, when a patient says these keywords, like, "I feel like I have crawling in my skin," or if they bring samples, that automatically puts them in a a diagnosis category that is a psychiatric in origin. And from that point on...
Just instant shift. You're in this... You get put in that basket, and then therefore it's something to do with your brain, your mind.
Right. You're put in that basket before you get a chance to even have a look or a biopsy or anything along the medical lines. You're already placed in that group.
Got it.
Oh, and once that's on your chart, then... The next resident or physician that comes in to see you realizes that he's not supposed to look either. By looking would be feeding into your delusion.
Got it. Wow. For you doctors out there and your other health professionals, I would urge you to go to the Morgellons.org website, Morgellons.org. I'm sure it's in your literature. It's got to be the talk of your profession. But even if you're in the general practice field, you need to know about this. You need to look for these kinds of symptoms. Charles Holman, the board chairman of the Morgellons Research Foundation. Again, we talked last time about this, but what is the known database of people who are afflicted? How many do we think? Let's just take the United States now, although it is literally worldwide. But what do you think in the United States is an accurate number?
I really, the situation is such that we are teamed up with Oklahoma State University, and recently our registration process has actually been handed off to them because they're going to start the epidemiology study, and, you know, it only makes sense to have it in one repository.
Sure.
So the updates from them, I haven't got a lot of them lately, but right now we stand at, I'm sure, somewhere around 5,000 registrants with the, or 5,000 households that are registered with the foundation. This can represent anywhere from one to as many people that are in the house that are infected. I don't know. Based on the fact that these people are crawling through the World Wide Web to find the Morgellons Research Foundation's website, because they've been mistreated medically, it boggles the mind as to how many are out there who never thought to even do a Google search for itchy, crawly skin disease.
Well, there could be 50,000, or it could be 100,000. We don't know.
There's no way of knowing.
So... the sky is really almost the limit on this one. It's that bad. Back in just a couple minutes, we have to pause again as we continue our third special report on the Morgellons affliction, that syndrome which nobody seems to really understand. We're learning, though, and we're going to get there. Be right back. Okay, we're back. When you go to Rents.com and look in the guest section, look at Cliff Mickelson's name and click on that, and you'll go right immediately to the Morgellons.org, Morgellons Research Foundation homepage. And there's something on there that really is particularly poignant. It's the left-hand picture. It's the lip of a three-year-old boy at 10 power magnification. And then look on the right. It's something that was pulled out of the poor kid's lip. I mean, children, I don't know how many children have this, but it doesn't seem to play favorites at all. Charles Holman, it's wide open. It's just there's no profiling that's been able to be done so far on this that would give us any indications about anything, I guess. It's a wide open, take no prisoners, you know, everybody's a victim kind of a disease.
A little bit disturbing that we have registrants from infancy to their 80s, and
infancy being how young?
Oh, I mean, I'm saying I know of one child that was like 18 months, I think.
Oh,
one registration.
Geez.
These are the most disturbing things that we have to see sometimes, you know.
Right, sure. Yeah.
You know, when you're involved in this, trying to get this thing organized and, you know, recognized and that sort of stuff, the cases you find that are out there, it's just overwhelming, Jeff. It's crazy. And our heart just goes out to each and every one of these people, you know, because we know when you're a Morgellons household, man, you know how it is.
Now, there are people out there wondering right now, is it communicable? Is it transmissible? We do know of entire families that have it. We don't know how it was spread. Do we have, Cliff Mickelson, any guesses about vectoring of this problem?
Yes, there's several potential vectors that have been isolated. None of them have been absolutely identified, but enough circumstantial evidence has been documented to point strongly in the direction of these particular vectors. One of the immediate vectors is the ooze that comes up from around the base of what we call the macrofiber, okay, and also extrudes out from underneath the edge of the callus as it slowly advances.
Mm-hmm.
The macrofiber itself, when brushed, which looks somewhat like a hair, but it's, in my personal opinion, is not a hair. It's more of a pupa stage of this thing. The macrofiber extends up out of a hair follicle, which is one of its favorite locations.
Well, we've talked about that. Let me just say very quickly that apparently these fibers literally take over and kick the hair follicle. Well, they don't kick the hair. They take over the hair follicle and begin to produce whatever it is they are.
There's a lot of hair loss.
They kill the hair. Yeah, absolutely, Charles. That's absolutely right. They kill the hair.
Kind of like a hermit crab taking over a shell, but they occupy the hair shaft.
They occupy the hair shaft, and at the initial stage, you will actually see two objects coming out of the same follicle.
Uh-huh.
One of them is the original tenant of the follicle, right, the hair, and the second one is the parasite, you will.
Yeah.
It will gradually kill the hair, or actually pretty quickly kill that hair, and take it over, and then it begins to produce this gel, and this gel contains substances that actually vector the disease.
So you do think it is a direct contact vector, the gel.
Yes,
if somebody touches an open lesion or a hair follicle that is no longer producing hair, it is possible if they rub that on their skin, they're going to get it?
If you rub the macrofiber, it will actually eject this substance.
Oh, man.
It will eject this substance. And the mature macrofiber will have this substance almost in a sheath climbing up the sides of the pupa form and climbs right up to the skin level. And if you rub against that hair or tease it in any way whatsoever with tweezers, it will eject this goo.
This is not of this earth. This is bizarre.
Oh, it gets better, believe me.
Well, listen now, let me run this by again. For you folks out there who are new to this, look at your arm. You see there's a hair. Pick a hair. The hair follicle itself under the skin is invaded and taken over by some kind of an intelligently designed machine, bioorganism. We don't know what it is. It takes over the hair follicle, kills off the hair, begins to eject and stick out the hair shaft, a fiber, if you will. And if you, as Cliff just said, if you mess with that fiber, it actually ejects some kind of an exudate, a goo that is transmitting this Morgellons to somebody else.
Absolutely. Now, that's one of the vectors. Another vector is underneath the callus. Underneath the callus is a pool of what appears to be a highly thin blood.
Excuse me, we got to describe callus. Callus is a lesion. It's an open wound on the skin that doesn't heal. It has a covering on it, and under that callus is what?
Under that callus, you will find a glowing red gel, and below that red gel, you will find a pool or a reservoir of what looks to be highly thinned blood, but it contains odd, pasty, almost amorphous forms within it. And those are highly contagious.
Bizarre. Now, how do we know this? Have we done tests in the lab? And Charles Holman, have we determined that this material can in fact infect someone, or is it?
No, it's. Yeah, I mean, these are all observations that Cliff has run onto with his years of research.
So these are right now. It's more anecdotal than anything else,
well,
but it is completely logical.
It is logical, but I do have to point out that my wife has had this 7-9 years, however long, I've known her for been with her for the past 6, and I don't have this. So my concern is that if Cliff's observations are correct, Right. And, you know, right. Who knows? They may very well be. Then why would some people be susceptible to the infection?
Well, that's a good question.
And others not. Right.
Well,
and
it's the same thing with HIV/AIDS. Some people are genetically immune, apparently, from having this virus dock with a cell.
It's a possibility. So, I mean, there's another piece of the epidemiology puzzle. Somebody needs to study me and say, well, why is this guy not getting it?
Right.
You know?
Right. Wow.
Now, by the same token, we've had, like you said earlier, whole families.
Right.
You know,
well, the baseball player.
Well, there's
former,
Billy's family. That's right. And the thing about it is, we don't know if this is human to human or simultaneous co-infection. These are things we just still have to get a handle on.
Got it. Okay.
And with no help from any health agencies.
Wow. Nothing's changed since our first program, Cliff. Nothing much.
No, and I want to say that Charles is absolutely correct. He's right on the money with that.
Okay, very good. Stand by. We'll pause and continue in just a couple minutes. During our next hour, we'll have two more people join us who are very well familiar with this disease, Greg Smith, M.D., and his wife, Judy Smith, a registered nurse. Hi, back with Cliff Mickelson, Charles Holman, and Cindy Casey. On the Morgellons.org website is a link at the top of the page, images, and I would urge all of you who haven't seen any of these pictures to take a look, a very close look at what this disorder, this syndrome, this disease, this affliction does to its victims. We've talked at some length in the past about the psychology of it. I did mention during the intro 2 breaks ago that there are central nervous system issues about this. Cindy, you want to talk more about that for us, please?
I think that's one of the most disturbing parts of it. The skin problems are disturbing in a way that it's very miserable. All the itching and the lesions and the disfiguring you get from the sores and the scars that you get.
If I might interject one other thing. The issue with the skin lesions, as Cliff is suggesting, and until someone can prove him wrong, could quite likely be highly contagious to other people.
Absolutely.
We don't know.
Absolutely. I was very concerned about that with my job. I worked with transplant patients and critically ill patients who are immunocompromised. And
sure.
I was constantly worried about that. I had lesions all over my hands and arms and they said, no, it's okay for you to work. Don't worry. It's not contagious. It's, you know.
How can they say that when they don't know?
I guess if they think it's in my head, then.
Delusion is not contagious.
You know, something like that.
Just take your meds.
The delusion.
Right. They sounded way more delusional than I did.
Yeah.
But the central nervous system effects, I think, are the most worrisome for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that early on. I was unable to think as clearly. I was unable to multitask like I used to, and I couldn't communicate. I would have times when I couldn't find the right words to say.
Correct.
To complete a thought, and I've nearly 99% of the people complain of the exact same thing.
Now, that was early on in your struggle with this or later on? When did that brain fog
early on, I noticed this before I ever had the skin problems.
I see. So you had no symptoms, but you did fall into a brain fog kind of a syndrome, and that was observed. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, all right, go ahead.
And also, not only just the actual trouble thinking, and concentrating, a lot of people have had neurological problems like foot drop, where the nerves in the feet are damaged, where you can't bring your foot up, you know, and a lot of people have had trouble walking, and so that's been a real issue. Other people have developed tics and twitches and eye movements that are uncontrollable and those kind of neurological symptoms. This is really scary to people. Some people have developed Bell's palsy or just a
Now, Bell's
paralysis.
Palsy Bell's palsy is an affliction of the 6th or 7th cranial nerve as it comes out the cervical spine and feeds the brain, feeds that left side or right side of your face. So that implies that there's something invading or otherwise attacking that nerve.
We think
correct?
That, yes, something is working on the nervous system, both centrally and peripherally.
Now, herpes virus is one of the leading contenders for causing Bell's palsy. We do know that.
Mm-hmm.
But this is something else.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Charles Holman, tell me more about the central nervous system problems that you're familiar with as director of the Morgellons Research Foundation.
Well, for one thing, you know, I'm not medically trained or scientifically trained at all. My career has been in music and information technology. That's pretty much my world. But I know that the woman that I married, I have watched her go through phases of this, and Cliff can tell you a whole lot more about the cyclical element of this disease, because it does do weird things. It waxes, it wanes, it changes. But I've seen this woman who is a charge nurse in the ICU at a major hospital in San Francisco stand there and not be able to answer a simple question like, where did you put your cell phone? Just, you know, complete blank. And it's called expressive aphasia, and it's common. I mean, they just, and I'm sure Cliff can comment on this too, that you just can't seem to complete a thought or make that thought go into words. Is that right, Cliff? Is that?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. And it even goes beyond that on a deeper level. This thing actually starts to hardwire itself into your personality.
What does it do to the personality? How does it change it, Cliff? Now, there may be an infinite number of ways, but what would you say to that question?
Well, it's really, really diabolical, I suppose is a good way to put it. You don't even begin to notice it at first, except it seems to work on a lot of negative tendencies. If you have things that you never really like to do, say balancing your checkbook or doing dishes or vacuuming,
right,
over a period of time, all of these kinds of negative things, you lose complete interest in doing them, and you are actually physically almost or mentally unable to do them.
So you can't. You just can't take care of business anymore.
You just cannot.
Uh-huh.
And you can look at your checkbook and go, I need to balance that. And this is July. I need to balance it. And it's August. I need to balance it. It's September. And a year goes by, and that thing is still sitting there looking
uh-huh.
at you.
Uh-huh.
It magnifies the negative aspects, traits that, you know, a lot of personalities.
Jeff, I had
Charles, excuse me. One more quick question for Cliff,
yeah,
and I'm going to come right back to you. What about hostility, Cliff? Hostility. Frustration, anger, rage?
No, I don't believe that it keys there.
Okay.
I think that medicines that maybe some of the people take do exacerbate those emotions.
Got it.
But I don't believe that that's where this goes.
Got it. Okay, thank you. Charles, go ahead, please.
I was just going to say that this whole thing about the neuropathy thing, the stuff that it affects on people,
uh-huh,
is probably one of the most devastating things of this disease. We've had some sufferers who have wound up being diagnosed with ALS type symptoms. So it's not something to just brush off. This is and it seems to affect people in different ways and amplify or speed its progress up in certain people faster than others. I don't know what all the stages are. I don't think we will know that for a while. But it's definitely a scary situation.
Children are often thought of as the primary victims of ADHD or whatever that really is, ADD and all the rest of it. And that is listed as one of the nervous system problems associated with Morgellons. What about that, Cindy Casey? Do adults end up with suddenly being afflicted or over a relatively short period of time with something like ADD?
Yes. A large percentage of these people, including myself, suffer now with adult onset ADD.
Is it... Have you seen cases, Charles, or anyone, of people who all of a sudden become, and I guess this is what I've already asked, but hyperactive, like they're on meth or speed or something? Is that the kind of ADD we're talking about, or is it something else?
I'd say no, but like Cliff said, a lot of people turn to alternative ways to get them off the couch, you know. I mean, I've seen this disease just knock Cindy out for days at a time. So I would say that the ADD stuff is, I think is important to look at. But I don't know. Cliff, were you hyperactive when you...
No. What this is the ADD part is not hyper, is not so much metabolism.
Just, we're talking about brain fog again?
It's mental, absolutely.
Right.
It's mental. It's inability to focus and stay focused. It also has a real subtle and slow-growing lack of interest in everything that used to matter.
Really?
Yeah.
One more Jellin's sufferer said to me that it was like, look, if it has more than one step, I really can't get involved in it.
Wow. Wow. Okay, that's like lifting a fork to the mouth.
That's enough, right?
And
there.
And then chewing afterward.
Yeah.
Got it up to the mouth here, but I don't care about chewing it, so hell with it.
Yeah.
Now,
all
right, let me try and get this straight. I have always pronounced it Morgellons. Some people say Morgellons, and Charles, you just said Morgellons, and
you know
got
what?
Me.
I'm by pronunciation. Actually, now I'm try because I met Cliff Mickelson, who's quite a linguist, and he of course pronounces it Morgellons, which I assumed was a 17th century vernacular, and he corrected me on that and said, no, that would be Morgellons. So I really don't care how we pronounce this, the name of this. It's just got sick.
All right. Very good. All right, that sums it up pretty well. I'm going to go back to the epidemiology of this again. Anything but anecdotal evidence, Cliff or Charles or Cindy, about direct communication of this disorder from one person to another, direct contamination, if you will. Do we have any examples of a husband and wife?
Your next guess.
Okay, all right. Well, very good. I thought it might be leading to that, so we're almost out of time, and that'll be a perfect segue.
Well,
so let's
Judy,
leave it there.
Judy, I think, contracted the illness about 2 weeks after Greg. So.
All right. Okay, very good. There is some talk, Cliff Mickelson, about insect biting being a one of the primary means of the onset of affliction or the introduction of affliction to the body. Does that ring true to you at all?
Yes, it does. That is also one of the oft-reported potential vectors. Many people report an insect being involved either as a catalyst or as a actual form of transmission.
Okay, very good.
This also affects insects, by the way, and kills them.
Oh, it does.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh. So this is not something that is necessarily going to stay within the Homo sapiens community.
No, sir. Absolutely not.
All right. Now, when we come back, we'll meet our next special guests. Our regular guests here, our first hour guests, will stay on. We've got all the lines fixed now, and we'll have a chance to talk to two people who are also afflicted, Gregory Smith, M.D., and his wife, Judy Smith. She is an RN. We're going to do that in just a couple minutes as we continue. Okay, welcome back. Our second hour of our third special on the Morgellons disease crisis. And it is a crisis for anyone who has it. We don't know how many people have it. Cliff Mickelson is back again tonight, one of the original fiber disease researchers with a tremendous amount of material on the Internet. Has contributed mightily to these three programs we've done. Charles Holman, a board chairman of the Morgellons Research Foundation, his wife Cindy Casey, a registered nurse. She is also the coordinator of the Morgellons Research Foundation's Nursing Advisory Panel. The site is morgellons.org. Hope you'll visit and certainly apprise yourself of this catastrophic illness. We don't know why. I don't know. I hesitate to use the word illness, but let's stick with it until we find out what it is. Maybe we will find out at some point. Let me ask Cliff Mickelson if you'd like to go ahead and introduce Greg Smith, Dr. Smith, and his wife Judy, or Charles, anybody, it doesn't matter. You folks are all in this together, and I thought it might be kind of nice.
Dr. Smith, we call him Obi-Wan.
Hey. Good to be with you.
Hey, there he is.
Hello.
Hey, Dr. Smith.
How are y'all this evening?
We're fine, thank you. Dr. Smith is a board-certified pediatrician who has practiced in Georgia for the past 27 years. He on medical leave from his practice because of Morgellons complications and recently forced to retire. Greg Smith suffers from Morgellons, as does his wife Judy, who is a registered nurse, who has also been unable to work because of this affliction. Welcome, both of you, Dr. Smith.
Good evening.
And
thanks for having us.
You're welcome. And Judy Smith.
Hey, how y'all doing? Thank you for having us.
Gee, Morgellons doesn't cause very attractive speech dialects, does it? Listen to that accent. Gee.
We go anywhere, people know where we're from.
You didn't have a chance, Greg.
It's real.
Not with that voice.
What can I say?
Not you don't have to.
In Oregon, one time, people at a 7-Eleven gathered people from around the store to come listen to us talk.
I believe it. But, all right, Judy. Now you, all right, who had it first, Greg?
Greg did, yes. Actually, 2.5 weeks before
how do we know this? When we're talking about subclinical possibilities of this thing, was it lesions that popped up, Greg, at first to let you know that you had something?
That, I think, was the thing that just brought it all to a head and made it appear to be a real illness. You know, I have changed a lot in thought processes about this over the last couple of years,
uh-huh.
and the subclinical disease, and you think back, you know, maybe this is something that has been going on for longer.
Right.
There was an acute episode that was biting, stinging, that actually I thought was cactus spines. We have collected cactus and succulents in our yard for years and, you know, bring them back on airplanes from all over the wherever we go and bring a whole fan load back on occasion.
Well, you can't do that anymore. Those are lethal weapons now, you see.
Just that.
Homeland Security wouldn't allow it. Yeah, if you bring back a succulent, never mind. Enough.
Well, Judy swears that I have given some of her plants blood poisoning.
Yeah, he would walk into them, they would stick him, and the poor plant died.
Come on.
For real. I told him you better stay away from him because he's killing.
Is this true? No, you're not being facetious. After you had this Morgellons, that you...
Check it out. Your leg's getting long.
All right. Okay, Greg, so what happened to let you know that there was really something wrong here?
Well, it was a whole scenario that was so very strange. The thing that first aroused are just kind of getting a little crazy, was plants that we had recently repotted and some sure specimen plants that we'd had for years were just dying. I mean, literally overnight, looking nice, good-looking plant one day, next day dropped. And they had root rot. When we pulled them up, they had no roots. And we were losing lots of these plants that were specimens. And about the same time, I had this bizarre cactus spines, we thought, in my arms. And it just kind of began to escalate. We began to see these bizarre things happening in our skin. You know, these little crawly things and fibers. There was one morning, like dust. It was the most odd, peculiar dust. And it was more like outside pollens and tiny leaves and little small sesame seed appearing objects that were all through our house. Through the house.
Now, tell me more. Now, you got little sesame seed things all over your house. What, on the tabletops,
well,
on the countertops?
Like mostly in the floors. You know, the scenario being, okay, the fans in the attic fan, you know, pull this in or whatever.
Okay.
But the attic fan, of course, has not been run for years. So it was very bizarre, very odd. And, you know, another scenario would have been some of the fans in the sunroom pulling air through and bringing stuff in from the outside. But it was the most peculiar, unusual dust and dirt that we'd ever seen.
Huh.
And about the same time, there was this peculiar popping sound.
What? Now, describe that.
Popping. Like little Rice Krispie pops.
All over the house?
Just in certain areas.
These are spontaneous pops, or when you walked?
Spontaneous. Just sitting listening to them.
Oh, now this is getting to be even weirder. Cliff Nicholson, have you ever anything like this before?
Well, actually, I'm right there with Greg on the plants because I own a farm and I have this in. Uh-huh. I've seen it in the plants. I've never really heard any popping sounds. However, you will hear sounds when you're working with this stuff because there are granules that are extremely hard and they will crunch.
Okay.
So that could be some of what he's describing. I can't really be certain.
It was just so peculiar, and it was at the onset of this whole thing that it just made so much sense to us as being a part of it. I have heard from a few other people that they've had something like that with the little popping sounds.
Okay, they've heard. So other people have heard these noises as well. Okay, Judy, when you started hearing these things, what did you think?
Well, we were really focused at that point in time on my plants that were dying. So, I mean, we went to our Hall County Extension Service so that we could ask them to, what is killing my plants? And Greg is a picker. You're either a picker or not a picker. And what I mean by that is if you've got a zit, you mash it. I mean, and I don't mean to be gross, but nurses can be that way.
Okay.
But I assured him that as long as I've had cactus forever, and he was digging so deep into his flesh to get these, quote, cactus spines out, and we were at that point in the sunroom spraying a diluted Clorox solution to try to get rid of some of the fungus.
Right.
That's this, when he was talking to you earlier about the fungus gnats showed up, and I've never had a problem with plants, you know, but they were rotting, stinking. So we did that for several weeks. And, of course, on the Internet, looking up everything we could possibly find. And at the point we realized that there was the cleaning, constant cleaning in our house, you know, we were trying to get it out of the house. And then there came the aha moment when we realized it wasn't in the house. It was in our bodies. Very frightening. Very, very frightening.
Now, as far as the plants dying, do we have any absolute connectivity here with Morgellons?
Nope.
No.
But your suspicions?
Yes.
Yes.
And it's a fairly common story of mold, mildew, water, certain soil exposures. But, you know, there's something there that's a common thread.
Okay. And let's jump to Cliff Nicholson, who is a farmer.
Yes.
And what about plants and Morgellons in your world, Cliff?
House plants do not do well in a Morgellons household, from my experience, Jeff. They do not do well. As a matter of fact, they go to see God very shortly.
Really?
Yeah.
They just die out.
They just end it like.
Okay, well, as Greg said,
they rot away.
That would suggest that there's something coming out of your body that is air vectored to the plants that kills them.
Well, Jeff,
something else I'm missing?
In a normal Morgy house, what we call a Morgy household, there is a huge amount of dust and detritus around. You cannot possibly keep it clean. You will find the fibers and detritus from this affliction everywhere in the house, no matter what you do.
This is still. I understand what you're saying, but so what you're saying is Morgellons victims are shedding exudate fibers.
Broadcasting.
All over the house.
Word.
Yes.
Broadcasting it, yeah.
That's a good word.
Is that right, Greg?
Peanuts. The little guy named Pigpen, who was walking around, the little cartoon character, and just things falling off of him.
Yeah.
There are days that I feel like that, and I see this stuff coming off me.
Oh, man.
And I totally agree with Cliff. I mean, we are just spewing this matter because the amount of house dust in everybody's home. Everyone reports
and
house dust.
The extension of that, because the plants die, is that there is an infectivity aspect to this shedding of whatever it is that we need to pay very close attention to. Wow. Okay, we will be back. Hold on, gang. With you, our third special on Morgellons disease, affliction, syndrome. Cliff Mickelson is here. Charles Holman is here. His wife, Cindy Casey, an RN, is here. Charles is the board chairman of the Morgellons Research Foundation. Cindy is the coordinator of the Morgellons Research Foundation's Nursing Advisory Panel. And Dr. Greg Smith and his wife, Judy Smith, RN, is here. Dr. Smith is the Medical Advisory Board Director of the Morgellons Research Foundation as well. We've got two RNs here tonight and one MD. Judy Smith and Cindy Casey. The issue of shedding, and I could say virus if this was a virus, but it's not, shedding material from this affliction, which potentially could infect others, would argue that someone so afflicted should not be working in a healthcare setting or perhaps any other setting where there is close proximal contact with any other human beings. I don't mean to put people in quarantine, but this is a problem, is it not?
Yes, absolutely. I was worried all the time that my patients or co-workers might be infected.
Did any of them come down with it to date?
Not that I'm aware of.
And how long did you work around them, Cindy?
Well, I worked there for over 16 years.
Okay, I mean, during the time you had this disease was, what, five or six years?
More like about 7 or 8 years.
Okay, all right, so interesting. Now, Judy, do you accept or are you still undecided about actually catching, becoming afflicted with Morgellons from Greg's infection? Are you secure with that, or is it still something that's open in your mind?
Well, and you know, everybody has their own theories, you know, and I believe that it is infectious, but I do not believe hand-to-hand contact will give it to another person. And that's my personal belief. I have nothing to back that other than my sister's been in and out of my house a lot over the mm-hmm. last 2 years. She mm-hmm. doesn't have it. Neither of my children have it. However, my dog does have it. She's a Jack Russell. She's a year and a half old, and her name is Sugar Baby Angel. And she's had biopsies and all this stuff. They're giving, trying to treat her for the mange, which
oh, this must be this must be interesting to see how the veterinary community would try to approach this.
Much better than the medical community.
Well,
do
luckily
they really?
We have one that's very, very good, very uh-huh. kind, and very interested in this. And
now, he,
you know,
he
I
knows...
would love to have the veterinary community uh-huh. in on this because it does afflict cats, dogs, and horses.
He okay. The vet knows you brought him up to speed, correct?
Yes, my personal vet. Yes, sir.
Okay. Now he's looked at your dog, and oh, would you please say the name of your dog again?
My baby girl's name is Sugar Baby Angel.
All right. Just amazing. All right.
Just
so
disgusting.
He now that yeah the dog the
that's
dog
a sweet dog
sure the dog has it. What are the dog's symptoms?
She mostly her feet. She will chew on the pads of her feet, and her, she has some hair thinning. She has red rashes. What I take her up there, and he gives her a shot of steroids actually, and she has you know she's been more comfortable for about. Two and a half, 3 weeks. She does better, but
So what makes you think that this is Morgellons? Do you find fibers in her skin?
Oh yes.
Yes.
Okay, so there are lesions.
Yes. Not so much open sores as ridden areas.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Now, as all of you listening know who have dogs, this is a very common situation in dogs, itching. Skin, hot spots, you name it, dog skin. Most of that comes from toxicity in dog food. Start feeding your dogs good food that are not loaded with chemicals and hormones, preserve, and watch what happens. Most of those things will go away. Now, I'm wondering
if
in your case, it's Morgellons. It's not toxicity from the food, so it's not going to go away. But I'm wondering if this might be something that is more widespread in the canine community than anyone has thought about.
I believe so.
And by extension, could, in some cases, the dogs be infecting family members?
Certainly. I mean, we don't know.
Well, the only thing I can say about my dog is we got this before she came to live with us. So.
I understand. A year and a half old. I got it.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, any vet out there in the summertime, what do they see? And heck, all year round, they see hot spots, they see itching, they see constant skin irritation. And my position is, if you ever want to read a book called Food Pets Die For. It exposes the criminal behavior of the pet food industry and the crap they put in dog and cat food. And after a certain period of time, all those toxins have to go somewhere, and a lot of them start to work their way through the skin, and the dog starts itching or the cat starts itching, and there you go. And then the dog goes to the vet, and the vet gives it an immune suppressant shot of steroids or prednisone, and the dog gets a little better, but the immune system suffers, and then that shot wears off or whatever, and it comes back. Now,
well, we excuse me for interrupting you.
That's all right.
We did the diet. We had this canned food is specifically for dogs who have, quote, food allergies. And there were more chemicals on the label of this
canned
food.
Thank you. Thank you.
Anything else?
Thank you for saying that. I've fought this pet food thing for a long time, and there is one dog food in America, only one, and cat food, that actually met the criteria and standards of the scientists at the San Diego Zoo. And that
food... Can I say one thing, Jeff?
Yes, sir.
I just wanted to point out that I've met this dog, Sugar Baby Angel,
yes.
By the way. And I want to ask you, how is a dog delusional?
There you go. Good question. Yeah. Well, when you talk about Jack Russells, maybe we got an argument here. But,
what can you say?
All right.
They have delusions of grandeur.
And so
anyway,
what is the best food for cats and dogs?
That's right. So the San Diego Zoo found only one food in America that was fit, in their opinion, and that food is called Natural Balance. And no, I don't own any part of the company. But I've seen many people go to Natural Balance dog food and their animals get better.
Well, I'm going to write it down because I'll try any and everything. I hate to see her suffering. It makes me cry more than watching us people.
Sugar Baby Sugar what?
Yes.
That's a
Sugar Baby
name.
Angel. Mm-hmm.
All right. Very good. Stand by. We'll be right back. Okay. And right back with you. I'm Jeff Rentz with a group of five extraordinary people, four of whom have Morgellons. Cliff Mickelson, Cindy Casey.
I didn't.
I know. You didn't what? They were talking. Didn't know we were back. We're back. Dr. Greg Smith and Judy Smith and, of course, Charles Holman, board chairman of the Morgellons Research Foundation. All right. Let's talk about diet, Cliff Mickelson. Are you there?
I'm here.
Yes, sir.
All right. Let's talk about food, diet, food allergies, food reactions. Food toxins. We talked about pet food a few minutes ago. Does a clean vegetarian / vegan diet make any difference at all in this disease, this affliction of Morgellons?
To the best of my knowledge, it makes no discernible difference. However, a good diet is mandatory if you're going to maintain any form of functionability. You need to, in fact, take supplements. A lot of vitamin C has been reported to be a positive effect. As much good nutrition as possible, which of course is something you want to do anyway, but in this particular instance, in this particular affliction, it's absolutely required.
Of course, makes common sense to me. Charles, would you agree with that as board chairman of the Research Foundation?
Well, I think good nutrition is paramount in everyone's life and survival.
Should be, I agree.
But unfortunately, none of us eat right. I mean, let's be realistic. Rarely do we eat right in this society. But with Morgellons, I think it's paramount to have, proper nutrition. I'm not so sure why, but, people that do try to go to different kind of diets have had mild success with symptomatic relief, and that's good. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think, I'm not sure, I've seen it listed somewhere, and I'll try to get the website to your producer. Good diet is essential.
Okay, Greg?
Yes.
Diet. Any changes you guys have made to do anything to try to help have worked or not worked?
Not really.
No, not
okay.
Today.
Fair enough, but that's all we need. Keep it simple.
I wanted to, if you don't mind me interrupting again. Sorry.
With that voice, you can interrupt anytime you want.
Well, you're so sweet. I wanted to mention again our county extension service. You know, where I was taking samples out there.
Yes.
Before the third and final trip to the extension service, we had two One was a larva, I know that sounds gross, in my shower scrub brush, okay? The other was a moth-like, a tiny moth-like something eating my dried corn that I feed the squirrels with. So when I called the county extension service again, I said, who is it that will identify what these bugs are? And he gave me the name of someone. And luckily, I kept my mouth shut just in time, believe it or not, that I didn't tell everything. But basically, the lady that the samples are sent to be, quote, identified, before we got off the phone, she said, I think you need to see your medical doctor. Well, I am a little southern lady, but we have hissy fits down here. So I left in my van, went to the the county. Thank you, honey.
Uh-huh.
And when I went in, I said in a loud voice, well, he's just got off the phone with this person. I said, well, did she tell you I needed to see my medical doctor? I said, do you see this bug? Yes. I said, do you see this bug? Yes. I said, let me tell you something. I know all about DOP, delusions of parasitosis, and I said, and if that's what I have, fine, give me something for it. Otherwise, I want to know what these bugs are. Well, of course, it's the matchbook test, which I'm sure some of the other folks has mentioned. You go into any your doctor's office or whatever with your little specimens, and immediately you get this sign tattooed across the top of your head, DOP.
Yeah. Correct.
And that I found very...
That is the county extension service.
Yes.
Right. I got
this, and they never did send me a report on what the two bugs were. Well, you know, that's very, very frustrating because who is he to say anything about anything? Because up until that point, I thought the man was very nice.
Right.
The lady is on my list. But the thing is, as a nurse, do you know the very worst patients in the whole wide world? Doctors? No, sir. They're the second worst. The worst patients in the world are nurses.
Nurses.
We do not want to be
a
patient.
I agree.
We have found that the majority of people who have registered with us, the number one occupation is nurses. Now, why? Maybe because in my 30 years of being a nurse, I was 19 years old when I got out of a technical school, and the thing that was taught to us is observe. Observe.
Right.
You know, we look at our world. We have to notice things about our patients. We write it down. We report it to the doctor. And for so many nurses, top of the line to be the profession with the highest second teachers. Well, here's the thing. Jesus didn't walk past the lepers, and the really true and good people are not going to walk by us afraid they're going to, quote, catch something from us.
Right.
I believe it is something that maybe with all the pollutants, the chemicals, and who knows. And I'm not even attached to whatever name they want to call this thing. I just want to continue to make people aware of it. Because as a nurse, if I could tell you 3 or 4 or 5 symptoms, you could put them in another slot. But and this will be something that will probably blow everybody's mind. Chronic fatigue syndrome. That is not a disease. That is a symptom. Fibromyalgia. That is not a disease. It is a symptom.
Thank you very much for saying that. Yes, I couldn't agree more.
Well, you know, I've been quiet, and I try to not to say too much because I can, like I said, have a hissy fit. I know. Well, I didn't want to embarrass my kids on the radio. But the thing that's so very upsetting to me is the way I perceive our community. I loved being a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband loved his job. We love that. But what's so frightening is I don't know if they're teaching listening 101 in med school anymore, and that's very frustrating.
Hey, Jeff, could I just say something?
Sure, go right ahead.
I guess you might have noticed that Judy can talk 150 words per second with Gus up to 200.
Oh,
yeah,
I
can. I do talk 90 mile an hour.
But her point about this whole DOP thing, I want you to realize DOP is the wall for Morgellons sufferers.
Yeah, it is.
Cliff and I have talked about this. How do we tear down this wall? It may have to be brick by brick. But the thing about DOP, and I'd like Dr. Smith to tell you about this, because DOP has a little tag on it. It's something called a diagnosis of exclusion.
Okay.
Am I right, Greg?
Exactly. And what that means in medicine, if there is no specific physical finding or diagnostic laboratory or x-ray test that you could do that confirms a diagnosis.
All right. Hold on right there, if you will. We got a break here. Let's come back and pick that up and revisit that from the beginning. I don't want anybody to miss this. So hang on. We'll pause and come right back with more of our special report, report number 3 on Morgellons. Okay, right back, and let's go ahead and pick that thread up again, if we would, please, and develop it fully. We have one segment to go, so go right ahead.
Hey, Jim. We're talking about DOP. I think this is important for the people who are patients who think they may have Morgellons who are going to consult with a dermatologist. No effects. DOP is a diagnosis of exclusion. In medicine, that is a disease that has no specific physical finding or laboratory or X-ray test that you can do to confirm.
So DOP does not fit Morgellons under any circumstance?
Of course not. But what happens is that with a diagnosis of exclusion, there's a list of tests that are recommended that one do as a good doc. And you've got to do these things to rule out the other possible things that can cause the same sort of symptoms.
Okay.
And when patients come in with this bizarre story of what they're seeing in their skin and they're bug crawling, and they've got their specimens in a little container, the dermatologist clicks his brain into neutral and thinks no more. And they do not take any of the steps that are really mandatory for a real evaluation.
Damn.
And this is wrong. This is just bad medicine.
Oh, no. It's
one thing, Jeff?
Negligence, incompetence, malpractice, whatever you want to call it.
If there is damage to a person as a result of that diagnosis, then that, I think, is malpractice.
I agree.
Cindy took a year for Cindy to go through all of this, though. I wanted to point that out, Greg, that it takes a long time to do the diagnosis of exclusion with this disease. It took a year.
You cannot finish that in 15-minute office visit that most dermatologists devote to the patient.
Jeez.
It's really morally and ethically offensive to me, and I feel ashamed that people in my profession are in this mindset where they're not opening their eyes, they're not even bothering to look.
Hideous.
Very, very profound. When we were at Tulsa, Oklahoma, the two doctors who were on the clinical research team that are working with Randy Wymore at Oklahoma looked at our skin of several patients, mine included, and they were marveling and they were asking the question, why have these dermatologists and other doctors not seen these fibers? And the answer was uniform from all of us in the crowd, because they haven't looked.
Greg, you were a practicing physician for 27 years in pediatrics. Did you see any Morgellons among your children that you were taking care of? That you know of?
What's Morgellons? What's Morgellons? Never heard of it.
Right.
And did not until this happened to me. Two things that are interesting that are not scientifically valid because they're only impressions, okay? But one is the number of young babies, particularly in the first year of life, with eczema and other chronic skin.
Oh, it's a tremendous epidemic in the UK right now.
Well, I think it's skyrocketing here.
Yeah.
And after I knew what I was looking for, as I was examining kids in the office, I noticed so many children who had little small sores, little scabs, normal kid stuff. But if you take a little simple magnifying glass, like the one on the otoscope, the thing we're looking at and the fibers were there in
many children.
There's a lot of people out there that have minimal symptoms. That's my belief.
Can I say something real quick?
Yeah, Cliff, go ahead, please.
I would like to say that Greg is absolutely right, and this is the black genius of this disease. Its ability to mimic and be mistaken for so many other symptoms, not only in humans but in animals as well and within dogs. How many millions of dogs are being diagnosed with manes that have Morgellons? This disease could not have been created better in a Hollywood think tank.
Oh, man.
If y'all don't mind me butting in again.
I told you, any time, just
you're
step
so
right
sweet.
In.
When I was 24 years old, I had my first baby. Her name is Erin. She's beautiful. And I ended up with a C-section and hemorrhaged on the operating table, laying there awake as a nurse. Yeah, it was pretty tough. Next morning, I was in the bathroom drying my hair, And, of course, you know, the nurse said to me, you need to get in the bed. We've got to give you blood.
She's tough as nails.
I got my hair all dry, my makeup on, and I got back in the bed, and she hung the blood, and everything was just wonderful. Okay. And then I come across a movie several years later. The movie is And the Band Played On.
Mm-hmm.
It tells the story of the AIDS virus and how it was identified, et cetera, and all this hee-haw going around, who's going to get the credit and how much it costs to test the blood.
Right.
My understanding is the same marker for hepatitis, they could use that marker in screening blood for the AIDS virus as well. Well, at the time, according to the movie, it was not cost-effective. So I had my husband draw blood on me at home, and he took it to his office with a Modine Grunts or whatever, some wild name on it, not mine, just to see. Luckily, I did not have AIDS and did not die of AIDS. Mm-hmm. However, my school teacher from the third grade had repeated surgeries, got blood transfusions, and she died about 4 years ago from AIDS because she had gotten it through a blood supply.
Right.
And that's very frustrating for them to know it's being transmitted and to not do anything about it.
Well, Jeff, I want to tell you one thing about that, if I could.
Sure.
It's really made me distressed as I have learned how the public health system in this country works or fails to.
Fails to. Well, you know, if I can say something, I put out a book on AIDS in 1991 called AIDS Exposed, and in that book I tried to delineate the utter abandonment of all common sense public health policies vis-a-vis HIV and AIDS because they termed it a social problem, not a disease. Go right ahead.
Well, okay, lost the place.
Let me throw this in while you're thinking of your place. You know what? Nurses and doctors, no matter what the illness is that's come down the pike, we are front line. You know, you cannot ethically refuse to take care of a patient with regardless of what their illness is. There were a lot of people did not want to take care of the people with AIDS because they were frightened. They were very frightened.
Oh, yeah, big stigma, yep.
And,
well,
and the
you
thing
know,
is,
I'm
you were talking, Greg, you were talking about public health issues.
Oh, yes. Well, what I have found out is that the way our surveillance in the United States works is that the CDC depends on individual health care providers.
Right.
That's, you know, nurse practitioners, docs, and individual public health departments. Notice any unusual disease occurrence or patterns and report it to the state level and into the CDC, and then they investigate. Sounds really nice, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So I can understand when lay people have written to the CDC and have gotten not a favorable response, but as a medical care practitioner, a medical doctor, writing a really passionate letter to the CDC and telling them, you know, we got a problem here, and I have some questions. Stated that you want to receive samples that are collected appropriately in a medical environment. I can do this. And I got blown off.
Sure. Yeah.
And I have just not gotten over that at all yet. And that just, the system is broke and something needs to happen. Because if this is what their response is to a medical practitioner saying, hey, we may have a problem here, then my God, we have nobody looking out for to protect us against epidemics and terrorists by terrorists. It scares.
I agree, and we're almost out of time, so let me start saying thank you to everyone. Dr. Greg Smith, thank you very much for being here tonight. If you have a final quick comment, I mean real quick, please make it.
Patients, if you've got DOP, arm yourself with knowledge before you see a dermatologist. If you don't get the full evaluation that you're supposed to get, do not accept that diagnosis.
Good for you. Thank you, Greg, very much. Judy?
Yes. I would like to say, nurses, please, band together, continue to aggravate or harass your doctors because we observe it, we need to report it, and the word needs to get out. It is not the last disease ever identified is AIDS. No, there's so many more. It's not over. We're going to come across more and more and more new things, and we need open thinkers.
We certainly do. Cindy Casey, a comment from you.
I just want to thank you again for having us on and urge anyone out there who's experiencing any symptoms like this to register on the website at www.morgellons.org. And contact our foundation, and we're going to work on this and get it figured out.
Very good. We will. And Charles Holman?
I just want to thank you, Jeff, for doing these shows, man. I really can't tell you how many people you're really helping.
Well, I'm honored to be able to do it. You guys are on the front lines. I'm just here to be of service when I can, so please don't hesitate to let me know.
You're being very kind, and you are really helping our efforts. Thank you, thank you.
Can I ask one more question?
Oh, please.
Would you tell me the name of your book again, because I want to go get it.
It's not around much anymore. It was called AIDS Exposed, and you might be able to find it on Amazon used books. They're around, but everything in the book came to pass, I'll tell you that much. Cliff Mickelson, my friend, thank you again for being here. A final comment from you.
Thank you, Jeff, for all you do. And I would like to say to all Morgulans sufferers out there who have received a DOP diagnosis, take back your power. The doctors do not sit at the right hand of God. That is a delusion that the medical profession suffers from, and we hope they get cured of it eventually.
All right, I'm going to say to everyone, thanks, everybody, very much, and God bless all of you, and keep at it.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks.
Great thank job, you, Howard.
Great.
Okay.
Bye.
And good night. Good night. All right, well, there's another 2 hours, and we're going to stay on this. It's a story that I will follow until we find out what the hell is going on here, and it's pretty damned creepy, as I'm sure you've all figured out by now. In the archives at Rents.com, if you're a subscriber, you can hear the first two programs. There are three now. They're very important in terms of information. I suspect... And you heard what Dr. Smith said about children. He is a pediatrician for 27 years. I suspect there may be tens, maybe hundreds of thousands of Americans with this disease. We don't know.